London, Piccadilly, 1999. A Union Jack fluttering in the breeze, then the elegant facade of the Ritz Hotel in sunlight.
I was phoned on the morning of Operation Ritz. Within minutes, photographers were turning up with ladders.
A swarm of photographers with cameras.
I was one of them. I got there right opposite the door. Within an hour, it was filled up. So, I mean, I've heard reports of 200 photographers.
Outside the Ritz, they're ready for one of the shots of the year. Charles and Camilla together at last.
It was just a question of waiting. And you're thinking, I'm dead opposite the door, so I must get them walking out side by side.
We're told that maybe up to £2 million can be made of an exclusive picture of Camilla and Charles together, the first ever picture.
Well, the buzz for this exciting picture, this first picture together, was absolutely massive.
OK, stand by, stand by, stand by. OK, this is Piccadilly. Charles is coming. Please cut to us.
The then Prince of Wales leaves the hotel, accompanied by Mrs. Camilla Parker Bowles.
It was huge. It was, you know, really intense light that was coming out. I mean, the whole thing was amazing. You know, it was pandemonium.
Charlotte, this way! Camilla, this way!
The burst of light. It must have been terrifying for Camilla, but it was a big moment. It was a moment of history.
No secret about their relationship now. A picture that people have waited so long to see. Absolute cascade of flashbulbs.
We'd spent so many years surmising about the state of the relationship, where it could go, could they ever be seen in public? And then suddenly, they were there in front of us. This was the future king with a woman he clearly wanted to marry.
A tabloid headline reads, "At last."
Operation Ritz was the first victory in a campaign to reinvent Camilla Parker Bowles, the royal mistress who had destroyed the fairy tale marriage.
She immediately became cast as the most evil woman in Britain.
It was like a lynching. All she could do was retreat under the fear of being victimised and polarised by public opinion.
30 years later, Camilla had won over the people and was crowned queen by Charles' side.
She was thrilled to bits. You could see her just smiling, beaming.
Did he get down on one knee to propose?
But who is the real person beneath the royal crown?
Camilla was a huge, huge hit with boys. She was sexy. She broke a few hearts.
Camilla loved Charles and Charles loved her. Fact is, she would probably quite like a quiet life. But because she loved this man, it meant she had to have a public role too.
For some, Camilla is a woman who went through huge personal sacrifice to marry her love. But for others, she's the arch strategist who plotted her way to the top.
Camilla now is no longer hiding under a rock. She can do political maneuvering with people like Piers Morgan and Jeremy Clarkson. She's defining her court.
Camilla needed to rehabilitate her reputation. She had to win over the public, and the best way to do that was through the press.
Certain members of the family have decided to get into bed with the devil.
I asked Harry about Camilla, and he said, everyone treats her like a goddess, but in fact, she's the wicked stepmother.
This is the story of Queen Camilla's extraordinary ascent to the throne and its costs, told by friends, journalists, and palace insiders who witnessed her transformation.
I think Camilla is a very shrewd, media-savvy person. We are told that the campaign to rehabilitate Camilla has been subtle. I don't think it's been subtle at all. It's got all the subtlety of a sledgehammer.
Queen Camilla, the wicked stepmother. Hashtag C4 stepmother.
To understand Camilla's remarkable rise, we need to go back to her beginnings. Camilla's journey to the throne began with her thoroughbred breeding. She was the first of three children, born to Army officer Major Bruce Shand and the Right Honourable Rosalind Shand, daughter of the 3rd Earl of Ashcombe.
Camilla was born in a very comfortable, wealthy family. They had 2 houses, one in London and one in the country with acres of garden. So that was their joy.
When Camilla was a teenager, it was all about horses. Riding was her favourite thing to do, and that developed later on into hunting.
A man fires a rifle skywards.
She didn't shoot much, but she would stand behind the guns, and if a wounded pheasant bounced down, she would just pick it up and wring its neck. So she was said to be an expert at dispatching wounded pheasants.
Delve deeper into Camilla's family history, and you'll find a relative who may have taught her a thing or two about the ruthless pursuit of kings.
Camilla's heritage is really interesting. Her great-grandmother, Alice Keppel, became famous because she was Edward VII's mistress.
And she somehow got away with it. She was very beautiful, she had big bosoms, and she had a huge appetite for sex, and she didn't hide it. Royal men were expected to have mistresses. When one went, the next one came in, and nobody thought it was a bad thing. And Camilla, when she was at school, stood up and announced that she was the great-granddaughter of this extremely attractive woman, and how wonderful that she's got an attachment to the king.
Camilla didn't flourish at school, emerging with just 1 O-level to her name.
Is it smile now? Try and pull your weight off that front foot.
Terribly softly, as though you're walking on eggs.
After a spell at finishing school, she was launched as an 18-year-old into London's high society swinging 60s in search of a husband.
Camilla was a huge, huge hit with boys, and she was fun, and she loved dancing, and she had a very dirty sense of humour. And they absolutely loved that. And although she didn't sleep around, she was sexy. And I think she actually broke a few hearts.
Camilla was hugely emotionally intelligent, curious, lively, rather attractive, vivacious. She had fun.
At the time, incredibly heavy smoker, one after the other. That's sort of left her with a hoarse voice, and she would drink quite a lot.
Camilla was probably the ultimate party girl. She enjoyed Annabelle's, which was a club in Berkeley Square. It was perfect because the 60s, everyone let their hair down. Everyone suddenly was free of the old restrictions on how you had sex, who you had sex with, and how soon you married. She was free of that.
It was in this privileged world of cocktail parties and aristocrats that Camilla started to outwit the opposition in the chase for men.
Andrew Parker Bowles was one of the most sought-after men in London. Women responded to him in an extraordinary way. He was sophisticated. He had an air of danger about him, and that's always very attractive to women.
Andrew Parker Bowles was very handsome, an incredible womaniser, the man that every girl would like to be seen with.
Camilla and Andrew hit it off very quickly, but she was the one who got him in the end, and it was a tremendous achievement because so many women were trying to pin him down.
Andrew Parker Bowles was even more the typical aristocrat who didn't see sexual fidelity as of the least importance. Camilla would regularly turn up without saying anything at Parker Bowles' flat in the Portobello Road, let herself in very quietly, and then rush into Parker Bowles' bedroom to see if he was sleeping with anyone else. And on a couple of occasions, he was. And so it was like a Brian Rix farce with Parker Bowles running in one direction and the other girlfriend running in another direction.
By the early 1970s, Camilla's relationship with Andrew Parker Bowles had cooled. But her attentions would soon be turned to a young Prince of Wales.
Prince Charles was, at one time, the world's most eligible bachelor. There was always a very nubile young woman who would run up to him somewhere in the world, like on the beach, and plant a kiss.
As Prince Charles wades in the sea, a woman runs up and kisses him.
Camilla moved into a flat in Westminster. It was here that one of her socialite neighbours arranged an introduction that would change history.
Lucia Santa Cruz had got very friendly with Prince Charles at Cambridge University. And Lucia told me that she suddenly had the most amazing thought that Prince Charles would go very, very well with Camilla. She was going out with Prince Charles one evening and she invited Camilla up to her flat. And she said to me, "It's wonderful, isn't it, when you do something and it suddenly works." They really liked the same things and they were roaring with laughter. And he said afterwards that he'd never felt so comfortable with anyone.
Camilla, what she really had was that she wasn't overawed at all by his royalty. There were some of his girlfriends who used to call him sir. You know, the fact is, this is a woman that was on the level with him. And yes, of course, there was a sexual attraction.
Charles and Camilla, it's definitely a love story. I don't think there were any sort of thunderclaps when they first met. She just thought Charles was very, very nice, and he obviously adored her.
Charles and Camilla were together for 18 months until some senior royals became concerned about their relationship. Lord Mountbatten, Charles's great uncle, advised the prince Camilla didn't meet the royal family's strict standards.
Prince Charles knew that he couldn't marry her, he wouldn't be allowed to, because at that time, and it's quite hard to believe, that women had to be a virgin. The future King of England had to marry a virgin because they had to be pure. That was it. And Camilla quite obviously was not.
A Royal Navy minesweeper at sea.
As a serving officer in the Royal Navy, Charles was assigned to a 7-month posting in the Caribbean. It was hoped distance would pull the lovers apart.
He wrote a letter to Lord Mountbatten saying, "I suddenly realise I don't want to be without her. This is terrible. I'm going to miss her hugely." It's a sort of moment when a 22-year-old young man suddenly realised that this woman, who he was so easy with, how important she was to him. I think Camilla felt very badly that she had been stopped from seeing Prince Charles. And how was she going to cure herself of that? Well, she cured herself by taking up with a man who she did love at some level.
Camilla and Andrew on their wedding day.
With Charles off the table, Camilla rekindled her romance with Andrew Parker Bowles. In 1973, they married and moved to Wiltshire.
The young Diana Spencer in her wedding dress, walking down the aisle on her father's arm.
8 loveless years later, as pressure mounted on the future king to produce an heir, Charles was also walking down the aisle with a new princess.
You have to remember that Charles, we in the press, spent our lives, it seemed, chasing every girl he went out with. And suddenly he found this dream of a girl, this young, innocent virgin, beautiful young lady, a true aristocrat.
Here is the stuff of which fairy tales are made. The prince and princess on their wedding day.
Looking on from the congregation was Camilla, quietly witnessing the arrival of the new woman in Charles' life.
When Diana arrived on the scene, it was a wow factor. She was tall, blonde, blue eyes, fantastic looking. She was practically the perfect princess material. This was a great big spectacle, and it was going to secure the monarchy forever.
A crowd of revelers wave Union Jacks.
The fairy tale continued, as a year later, Diana gave birth to Prince William, the heir.
I'm obviously relieved and delighted. It's marvellous.
Followed by Prince Harry, the spare.
It's lovely, I'm all excited.
But by the late 80s, those working for the princess were soon privy to whisperings that Camilla had not been prepared to let go of the man she loved.
Diana told me she confronted Charles and Camilla Parker Bowles when she had found them alone in her sister's house. And to have had the courage to confront the woman your husband is having an affair with, I think did her great credit. She recognized now that she was going to have to fight.
Queen Camilla, the wicked stepmother. Queen Camilla, the wicked stepmother.
I started on this beat in 1988. We began then to hear this talk of a woman in Wiltshire. I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want the fairy tale to burst. And it was just swirling around as a rumour. My goodness me, the Royal Beat is a rumour mill. There's gossip everywhere. But the voices got louder and louder about this woman who was more important to Charles than Diana ever could be.
There were people in certain circles knew about Charles and Camilla's affair. But I think that Charles was completely smitten by Camilla. When they rekindled the affair, the desire to be with her was too strong.
The woman in Wiltshire really became known after 1986. There was always the knowledge then that there was something going on.
Certainly, the princess spoke to me about unhappiness in her private life. There was gossip about Charles and lots of women. The difference, I suppose, about Camilla was that it was denied more vehemently.
Kensington Palace.
As the press were picking up the scent that Camilla had secretly reignited her affair with Charles, Diana went on an all-out offensive. She reached out to a journalist, offering a story to tell.
Diana was a woman who was sick of living a lie, effectively being this glamorous media superstar and then going home to an empty room. And I listened to this extraordinary story come spilling out.
A cassette tape plays.
I was astonished. It was talk about suicide attempts, about this eating disorder, bulimia, and this woman called Camilla Parker Bowles.
Writer Andrew Morton.
Morton used Diana's explosive interview for a book published in 1992. The name Camilla Parker Bowles was now exposed for all to read.
When Diana, her true story was published, the lives of everybody to do with the book changed dramatically, none more so than Camilla Parker Bowles, who was now for the first time outed as a secret friend of Prince Charles, who gave an awful lot of pain and hurt to Princess Diana.
Andrew Morton's book was the moment when the penny absolutely dropped, that this marriage was completely dead and that Camilla was one of the main reasons. And more than that, there was this idea that this spectre, if you like, of Camilla hung over this marriage.
The Andrew Morton book was probably the biggest disaster in Camilla's life. It made her, as the press famously put it, the most hated woman in Britain.
Everybody loved Diana, and Camilla was the other woman. She was the one who was destroying this fairy tale marriage and taking it away, not just from Diana, but from the rest of us, from the country.
Charles and Diana's marriage was in freefall, and the tabloids reported the warfare as the insults started to fly.
I mean, I think there's no doubt that Diana knew that if she got the first rapier thrust in and presents Camilla as a Rottweiler, as the wrecker of a marriage, Camilla really didn't have a chance.
She was keeping a low profile this morning, but at the family home in Wiltshire, her husband, Andrew Parker Bowles, was fending off reporters.
Nothing to say, you're wasting your time here. Thank you.
When I was editor of Tatler magazine, we used to get these unbelievable poison letters castigating Camilla in the most ugly, horrible, vicious, foul language to such an extent that we had to take some of them to the police. That was just a tiny tip of the iceberg of what she knew was out there from the great Diana loyalists.
Uniformed police officers escort Camilla along a street towards a parked car.
The Prince and Princess of Wales divorced in 1996. A year earlier, Camilla and Andrew Parker Bowles had also untied their knot. Yet despite Charles and Camilla both being single again, their relationship had a new enemy on the horizon.
The Queen felt that Camilla should leave the stage and leave it sharpish. Her presence was doing damage to the monarchy, and she wanted her gone. Not yesterday, not the day before, but forever.
In darkness, a police vehicle drives up to a damaged car.
But on the 31st of August 1997, it was Diana who tragically left the world stage. Killed in a car crash in Paris, the Queen of Hearts was gone forever.
A recovery vehicle moves the car.
The whole world was in mourning. Charles and Camilla were clearly getting the blame for all sorts of things, unfairly. People were saying if they hadn't split up, if Camilla hadn't taken Charles away, all these sort of things.
It's easy to go through that logic, isn't it? That if the marriage had been happy, if Camilla hadn't been Charles's lover, then Diana wouldn't have been with Dodi Al-Fayed in that car, in that tunnel, which led to her death. So Camilla realised that she was being put right back in the hatred box then.
Camilla and Charles' reputation had hit rock bottom. To survive, they would need a miracle worker to boost their battered public image. And Camilla knew a PR expert who was just the right man.
Mark Bolan was a stroke of genius, and he had a plan, and Camilla had interviewed him, and his plan was, and it was very attractive, that he was going to sell her and her relationship with Charles to the public. So, in a way, he's their fairy godmother. He waved his magic wand.
I remember being introduced to Mark Boland. He immediately seemed different. It became obvious that he had been brought in to make Camilla acceptable to the public. And that was a big job.
Diana's private secretary, Patrick Jeffson.
The way to look at the PR campaign that Charles's office launched, there was always an underlying motive. You are going to promote Charles and Camilla. Results were good stories published, bad stories suppressed. And if people got hurt in the process, including Charles's own children, then that was a price you had to pay.
Queen Camilla, the wicked stepmother. Queen Camilla, the wicked stepmother. Crowds watch a teenage Prince Harry with Charles.
Just 3 months after the death of his mother, Prince Harry was making his first public appearance alongside his father. Charles' popularity had nosedived, but Camilla's new courtier was about to launch his master plan, and the princes would become part of his campaign.
The arrival of Mark Boland as a PR for Prince Charles totally changed the complexion of the way Camilla was perceived. The primary obstacles were the Queen, but also William and Harry, because if William and Harry accepted Camilla, then the public would take their cues from them, because they were Diana's torchbearers on Earth.
I got a call one day to tell me that William was going to meet Camilla for the very first time. But the source told me there was a bit of nervousness on Camilla's part. I don't think William was as nervous. And it was all a bit of an ice-breaking scenario.
The meeting took place at St James's Palace while William had returned home from school in Eton. A spread of cakes and squash were hastily put together in the Prince's honour.
The fact that she was now meeting the Prince of Wales's eldest son helped pacify some people because they were saying, well, you know, if William's accepting her, then, you know, maybe she's not that bad.
A tabloid front page.
Yeah, that's the one. Right, well, this is Camilla meets Wills. I know who my source was, and this is a source I've used before and who has always been spot on.
It was later revealed Charles's source was Mark Bolland. But in his controversial memoirs Spare, Harry writes the leaking of the story was actively promoted by Camilla, citing it as his first example of his stepmother using the princes unfairly to boost her image.
What people are starting to understand now is that a royal source is not an unknown person. It is the palace specifically briefing the press, but covering their tracks by being unnamed.
Royal reporting is a bit like being a cross between a political showbiz and investigative reporter. You've got to have your nous about you. You've got to try somehow to get yourself through the haze. You don't get a source that's a real source very often. And if you do, you protect them, like, you know, all with everything you've got.
Now, I know people poo-poo. Oh, yeah, here we go again. They're saying it's a source and all this sort of stuff. But these sources do exist. There's always someone who knows what's going on. You've just got to find them.
Mark Bolland's crusade was gathering momentum. Months later, even the Queen succumbed, attending a function where Camilla was present.
Buckingham Palace are playing down the importance of today's meeting, but for Charles and Camilla, it is a milestone. The heir to the throne's long-term companion, now accepted in royal circles.
But while William was keeping his head down completing his studies at university, the teenage antics of Harry had come into the sights of the tabloid press. And Harry writes in his memoirs that Mark Bolland was about to cash in on the princes again to endorse Charles and Camilla.
Harry's personality was so very different from William's. Harry was like the errant younger brother who had that cheeky smile. He kept a very different circle of friends to the other royal family. They liked to party, they liked to go out. This is the front page. Harry's drug shame. Prince admits, I smoked pot at Highgrove. Charles orders him to heroin rehab clinic. Charles was shocked by how often Harry used cannabis. This was a huge story at the time. You've got a young royal who's admitted to taking pot. And not something we would have heard about from royals in the past.
The News of the World reported Charles had arranged a visit for Harry to a drugs rehabilitation centre to learn the error of his ways. It quoted a family friend as the source.
Any royal involved in illegal activities is a great story. The only problem with this was spin. This hadn't happened as they said. What had happened was that Harry had gone to this drugs rehabilitation place 2 or 3 weeks beforehand on a visit. Now, it was spun then to try and show people that, don't worry, Dad's taking care of it. He's taken him to a drugs rehabilitation unit to show him the evils of his ways.
It was a brilliant piece of spin and clever journalism by the News of the World. So they had the story, but the fact is they then did a deal with the palace and they then spun it to make Charles look as good as possible.
As Harry tells it, he was a total stitch-up. Yes, Harry's taken drugs, but he didn't do the rehab. The story was basically fictitious.
Camilla with Bolland.
But Bolland's spin worked. And within hours, the broadcast media made it headline news.
Prince Harry admitted to regularly smoking cannabis and drinking alcohol.
Prince Harry admits smoking cannabis, says the Sunday Times. Prince Harry.
The whole of the News of the World's coverage, as far as I can make out, is based on an interview with what they call a family friend. Now, if this family friend was speaking with St James's Palace's approval, that would be utterly fascinating.
The trail to find the family friend led to Camilla's hand-picked king of spin, Mark Bolland. When the News of the World presented their evidence to Bolland, he used his close relationship with editor Rebecca Wade to soften the story. He even supplied Wade with the extra detail of Harry's royal visit to the rehab centre to make Charles look good.
After many, many years of lies being told about me, there comes a point where the relationship between certain members of the family and the tabloid press have decided to get into bed with the devil to rehabilitate their image. But the moment that comes at the detriment of me, I draw the line.
I think it was a very bad decision on Bolland's part. I think Charles was slightly distracted at the time, but I think he would probably feel now that he shouldn't have allowed that to appear. Because it does look like a son being sacrificed to make his father look better.
I think Charles's office were pretty cold-blooded in the way they used Harry, misrepresenting facts in order to portray his father and his mistress in a better light.
Gliding over London.
By 2005, the rehabilitation of Camilla was about to reach a milestone.
Royal journalist and author Robert Jobson.
Well, I'd got a call from a contact, and the person said, get yourself to a phone box as quickly as you can.
Two red telephone boxes side by side.
Phone box to phone box call you really can't trace. And the source said three things. The POW, the Prince of Wales, has been given permission to marry his lady. It will be on such and such a date, and it will be at Windsor Castle. And I said, any more? I said, that's all I've got. Bang. We start writing, doing the story under the cloak and dagger ways, but obviously there's a lot of chances of a leak here. But this particular story set a whole thing rolling.
They've waited long enough, but tonight they emerged as a couple soon to be wed.
It was a huge scoop. I thought, wow, well done, Robert Jobson.
The story broke that they were planning to get married, and it just so happened that I was there at Windsor Castle.
How are you feeling, man? All right.
I think I said something about the ring, and up it came.
A close-up of the diamond ring.
Which made a great picture.
She was thrilled to bits. You could see her just smiling, beaming.
Did he get down on one knee to propose?
It was a fantastic story. The fact that they got engaged, what comes after an engagement? Wedding. It's that simple.
Crowds line the streets outside Windsor Castle.
Women on their wedding day are always terrified, and she must have been more terrified than most because she was transitioning from the most hated woman in Britain to the bride of the future king.
Spectators wave Union Jacks.
I was at the town hall in Windsor, and there's a lot of members of the public, and they came out and they seemed to be unsure whether they should go and wave to the crowd. But when they came out and they were seen by the crowd, there's sort of cheers and waving and, you know, wishes of good luck. And I think that made them realise that, you know, by that time, she'd been accepted.
Camilla, in a coat and feathered hat, walks arm in arm with Charles as he waves to the crowds.
Over 20,000 people lined the streets of Windsor to wish the newlyweds well. Camilla was now firmly embedded within the royal family. But in an explosive interview given more recently, Harry used dramatic terms to describe how his fears about Camilla were coming true.
On CBS News.
She was the villain. She was the third person in the marriage. She needed to rehabilitate her image. That made her dangerous because of the connections that she was forging within the British press. And with her on the way to being Queen Consort, there was going to be bodies left in the street because of that.
He seems to think that Camilla was leaking stories, was this Machiavellian character. Dangerous in what way? She's not some sort of assassin.
I met Harry at a polo match. I asked him about Camilla and his face darkened and he said, everyone treats her like a goddess, but in fact, she's the wicked stepmother.
Prince Harry and Meghan Markle on their wedding day.
By May 2018, Prince Harry was also tying the knot, marrying Meghan Markle. elevating them into worldwide superstars.
There were thousands of people there. It couldn't be more packed. We were all thrilled to bits. It was just joyfulness.
And the fact that she is of dual heritage was just seen as a plus, a positive move towards diversity and integration and a modern monarchy.
Crowds greet Harry and Meghan.
Meghan seemed to be taking to it like a duck to water. I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
But within months, fierce anti-Meghan stories started to appear in the press about wedding plans in the build-up to her big day. And one in The Sun, quoted as being leaked by royal sources, suggested a fractious rift between princesses that Harry claims has Camilla and Charles at the heart of it.
A really key moment in Spare is when Harry and Meghan and William and Kate are all trying to figure out how this story about the crying before the wedding got into the public. And when they start trying to figure out who leaked the story, William sheepishly says, while you were on tour, we had lunch with Pa and Camilla, and we mentioned Meghan and Kate had a little disagreement. So in Spare, Harry openly says that this is how this story got out. And what's more, it deliberately was told in a way to make Harry and Meghan look bad.
My family have been briefing the press solidly for well over a decade. The level of planting and leaking dedicated to trying to trash my wife and myself. The saddest part of that is certain members of my family are complicit in that conflict.
Harry has a pretty mechanistic view of the mass media, that there's all a big conspiracy. My own experience is that it's a world of Chinese whispers, of hints and guesses, and it always has been, and it always will be.
The reality is, there's a small number of people in a goldfish bowl, and of course, they all talk, they're all human beings. That's more likely what happened, is that someone got to hear about this. They've got people in the room half the time that are serving things. You know, they've all got ears. We've all seen Downton Abbey.
A photo of a tense-faced Harry and Meghan.
But the negative press against Meghan continued. A year and a half later, the Duke and Duchess could take no more and announced they were stepping down as senior royals. They moved to America and broke their silence on The Oprah Show, telling a story of a family who had failed to protect Meghan from an abusive press and claims of racism.
I'm not sure Harry realised how incendiary it was. The whole country seemed to be taking sides.
The race revelations were hotly debated. Broadcasters like Piers Morgan couldn't contain their emotions.
If people want to believe Meghan Markle, that's entirely their right. I don't believe almost anything that comes out of her mouth.
I don't think Harry thinks things through, but I think it's his nature just to press the nuclear button.
Crowds around a concert stage in the Mall.
The royal family were a fracturing institution, and it was the aging head of the firm who would try to bring unity. As her Platinum Jubilee celebrations began, the Queen urged her people to look to the future and the monarchy's survival, in which she saw Camilla's role as key.
The campaign for Camilla's rehabilitation really hit the nail on the head when the Queen herself made a statement in which it was her dearest wish that Camilla become the Queen Consort. Here was the Queen herself putting the final seal of approval on the woman from Wiltshire. This was a happy family occasion. And who wasn't there? Harry and Meghan.
I think it's very interesting to see how Harry's position and Camilla's position within the royal family, they're virtually sort of reversed, because Camilla used to be the hated and despised outcast. Now Harry's the outcast, and Camilla's seen with affection and a sort of safe pair of hands.
A floral tribute upon a coffin draped in the royal standard.
The Queen died just weeks later, on the 8th of September 2022. and her hopes for harmony within the Windsor family would soon be quashed. As the date was set for Charles' coronation with Camilla by his side, Harry would go global with his grievances, aired in his worldwide controversial Netflix series.
A Netflix documentary, Harry and Meghan.
She's becoming a royal rock star.
And then
everything changed. There's a hierarchy of the family. You know, there's leaking, but there's also planting of stories.
There was a war against Meghan to suit other people's agendas.
It's about hatred. It's about race.
It's a dirty game.
It was incredibly vicious. It's almost as if he's talking to his therapist and not to the public. He has to move on from never getting over his mother's death. He has to move on from casting Camilla as the wicked stepmother.
But Camilla wasn't going to let Harry's ambush go quietly. After the first three episodes of the Netflix series were released, she chose to attend a star-studded Christmas lunch in Mayfair, alongside two of Meghan's most vocal enemies.
I think it was unfortunate that Jeremy and Piers were at that lunch. By that stage, of course, Piers had been openly extremely hostile to Meghan and Harry, and I don't know why they were invited.
Something that no one saw coming was that Jeremy Clarkson, a few days later, would write a column about Meghan based on the Netflix series that was pretty horrific.
In his column, Clarkson attacked Meghan with a vicious bombast that shocked the world. "I hate her," he said. "I am unable to sleep as I lie there dreaming of the day she is made to parade naked through the streets of every town in Britain, while the crowds shout shame and throw lumps of excrement at her."
It was vile, it was condemned widely, and wait, what is this? Camilla just hung out with him.
Camilla now is no longer somebody who's hiding under a rock. She's now in full view. And of course, she's going to have favourite journalists. She can do a little bit of political manoeuvring with people like Piers Morgan and Jeremy Clarkson, and there may be raised eyebrows, but she's defining her court.
I think Camilla, far from being the simple countrywoman that we were sold, is actually a very shrewd, politically media-savvy person. We are told that the campaign to rehabilitate Camilla has been subtle. I don't think it's been subtle at all. It's got all the subtlety of a sledgehammer.
Charles and Camilla, both wearing crowns, wave at cheering crowds from the Buckingham Palace balcony.
On the 6th of May 2023, Camilla was crowned queen alongside King Charles III. Her remarkable rise was complete.
From the family on the balcony to a pile of hardbacks entitled Spare on display in a bookshop.
Just months earlier, Harry's memoirs had hit the bookshelves, his final battle cry against his stepmother. In them, Harry even identified members of the press he believes are complicit in her ascent.
To journalist Geordie Gregg.
I presume you read Spare. How did you feel about being name-checked?
I have read Spare. As you mentioned, I am name-checked as being close to Camilla. I think there's a sense of exaggeration in what he thought happened in that process. I think Camilla's always been pretty reticent and professional. My goodness, what she could say.
Harry has got a blinkered view about how the media works, but also the way the palace works. I mean, the idea that Camilla is orchestrating these leaks is a nonsense.
I would say that I wrote to Camilla once, and she wrote back a lovely letter, but she said, I'm so sorry, but I have no interest in cultivating a special relationship with any particular journalist. And I took her at her word. And to my knowledge, I don't think she's done it with other journalists. Harry does feel she has, but I don't know the truth.
A bird's eye view of London.
The ascent of Queen Camilla has been a story written on the typewriters of Fleet Street, home to the British press. One thing Harry is undeniably right about is that Camilla's relationship with the press has been key to her creation. Tucked away down a quiet alley off Fleet Street is St. Bride's Church. For over a century, journalists have flocked here. And for the past decade, St. Bride's has had a very special patron watching over it.
I think the fact that Camilla is patron of St. Bride's Church, which is commonly known as the Journalist's Church, is quite ironic. And I think it would be ammunition for Harry to prove his point that Camilla's in bed with these nasty journalist people. But it's nice to have a royal patron.
A younger Charles and Camilla.
In the story of Charles and Camilla, love triumphs. It's as simple as that. There was moments when she was pilloried, when she was ridiculed, when she was insulted, and they both just stood firmly with each other, and that led to a redemption, and it worked.
The newly crowned King Charles and Queen Camilla riding in the gold state coach.
I think the fact that Camilla is patron of St. Bride's Church is extraordinarily symbolic. It's actually an example of the cynicism that runs through this entire story. When the history is written of Charles and Camilla, it will not be seen as a particularly glittering episode in the British monarchy. I think it'll be the opposite. I think it's rather tatty, tawdry. It's a story of opportunism and extraordinary cruelty to those who got caught up under the wheels of their inexorable, inevitable love.